Nina has a question for you.
No, just your background, whether you studied Buddhism or you are a Buddhist.
Actually, I'm not a Buddhist. I'm actually a Christian, a Roman Catholic.
Yes.
But I'm generally interested in philosophy. So when I met Pong at Dickman's, Pong invited me, why don't you come and join us for the discussion.
That's nice, yeah.
So I believe, any, doesn't matter, it's in any religion, it's all, the message is more or less the same in all religions. And especially Buddhism being a philosophy can be applied to any religion. So I'm more interested in being spiritual than religious. So that's why I'm keen to hear what you guys are discussing and to enhance my knowledge as much as possible.
You said you have a topic from lunch from your discussion with Hong that you would like to mention. So something about lunch?
Yeah. This afternoon at lunch time, we sat on the dining table with Nina and Bob, who sit near to me, and opposite Pong and another Hung. We had about five people. And when I offer Nina yogurt, everybody had one yogurt, but I asked Nina, do you like the yogurt? And Nina said to me, yes, I like it. Normally, I have two yogurts, and I give her two. And when I eat with yogurt, I very smoothy, and I feel very like it. And I asked Pong, would you like to try papadam dip? With would you like to try papadam with the yogurt? How do you feel tasty? Can you share for your experience tasty with it together? Would you like to share about your experience about tasty with a different flavor?
It's a bit salty, sweet, softness, cool.
At that moment, there's no papadam.
Is that true?
At that moment, it's only the taste, sour, no name as this kind of food or anything, only taste is experienced, and no one who experienced either, because it's only that reality which can taste, only at that very moment, just one moment, no one there. So, no one here. Just seeing at moment of seeing, hearing at moment of hearing, and thinking at moment of thinking. If this is true, it can be directly experienced. The nature of that which experiences without other reality mixed or together with it at all. Because seeing is the seeing, and seeing sees only that which can be seen. And life is like this, moment of seeing, moment of hearing, moment of thinking, moment of like, dislike, from birth to death. Can anyone change it? From seeing to be other thing else, which is not the moment of seeing, no one at all. Can anyone have it arise at will? Seeing. Can anyone make it arise? Very simple question. No. No one. Because it has conditions for its arising. Without the eye base, without the reality which can impinge on it, without condition for seeing to arise, seeing cannot arise. Because even now, everyone has eye base, and there is that which can impinge on it, but it depends on conditions, whether it is hearing or seeing. No choice. Or by conditions. We don't have to call it anything, but if we would like to call it or to know that this is a reality, we can use the word anatta, non-self, non-soul, no one, at moment of seeing, hearing. But there can be thinking that it's I who see, it's I who hear. But actually, if there is no seeing, no hearing, can there be the idea that I am seeing? So actually what one takes for I, my, me, must be only that which appears, but there is no understanding of its arising and its falling away. So very rapidly, because seeing and hearing cannot arise together at all.
Rajiv, having listened and considered a little bit now, what is heard now, would you say?
Sorry, I'm just trying to fathom the concept.
Right.
Yeah, because I have not looked at it in that angle.
Right. Yeah. So what Ajahn is saying is, like at a moment of eating or tasting, we think it's tasting papadom, but actually at that moment of taste, it's just taste that is experienced, just the flavor that is experienced at that moment. And then afterwards there is thinking about, oh, I like the taste of papadom. And it seems like it is I or someone who's tasting, but at that moment it's just a moment of experiencing, just a moment of tasting, and then gone completely. And at this moment of hearing, it seems I can hear someone talking, but actually there is just a moment of hearing sound, just sound that is heard, and immediately there's thinking about different words, different ideas, and it seems that I can hear, but it's just a moment of hearing and only sound that's heard, and then thinking about what's heard. So what we're discussing is more about the reality of life at this moment. So actually they're just different moments of experiencing through the sense doors, eyes, ears, and so on, and then thinking about what is experienced, thinking about flowers on the table, thinking about flavors tasted, thinking about sounds heard, thinking that I can experience all these things.
I heard the word concept from you, right, just a moment ago.
Yeah.
At moment of tasting, is the taste not real or it's real? The taste.
It's real at that.
It's real at that moment.
Yeah.
That which no need to call it anything, but it has its own characteristic, like taste or smell. Everything which is here now, we don't have to name or call it. But each one is different. That's why we use different words to represent the quality or the reality of it. So there are realities, for sure, and since we would know what one means at this very moment, that's why we use different words to make known what we are talking about. Like when there is the word hearing, no one thinking about seeing, but hearing is a reality. Even if we don't call it hearing, it hears. So there are realities and concepts after the experiencing, the thinking. For example, now, this is not very easy to think about. What is seen is not people, not thing, not anyone at all. It is just a reality which can be seen. That's all. But who knows the succession of the rising and falling away so very rapidly of seeing and that which is seen. So it appears like as soon as there is seeing, many colors appear as the object right now, with the impression of something, the sign or marks of different color, then it conditioned the ideas. I see someone, I see something, but actually it's only that which is seen. Without that reality, which is there with the hardness and softness of its touch, if there is no such reality, there cannot be seeing, right? So it's there, what is seen is there, with the solidity, heat and cold, which is touched. But the heat and cold cannot impinge on the eyes. Only that which is there with it can impinge on it, which condition different colors, because the composition of the heat and cold and solidity are very different. So it conditioned different shape and form. There is the idea of something after seeing, not at moment of seeing. So at moment of seeing, there's no idea. It sees. And thinking is not seeing at all. We can think without seeing, hearing. So different realities in a day, from birth to death. Is this true? It can be directly experienced as it is by having more and more understanding of it. What is the difference between beings and that which is non-being? Is there any difference? That which can experience and that which cannot experience anything at all. There are only two categories of realities, no matter in this world or in any other world. For example, hardness cannot experience, but there is hardness. And if there is the reality which can experience it, hardness cannot appear at all. And who knows about the reality which can experience right now? As not anyone at all, only a reality. Something to think about?
Of course, yes.
Usually we don't think much about what life is, we're just busy following all our activities. But if we begin to consider a little more about what life is at this moment, then it helps us to understand a little bit more about what the truth is, what is actually real now, as opposed to what is imagined as usual. So when we're asleep at night and dreaming, it's obvious when we wake up that it was like a fantasy world. But actually, even during the day, a lot of the time, most of the time, it's like we're living in a fantasy world, just thinking about all sorts of stories and ideas about lunch and our journey here and the people around. So there can just be a little bit of considering, a little bit of understanding about what the truth really is at this moment. So that's what we're discussing.
That's why we talk more and more about realities right now, in order to have more and more understanding of the truth of it.
Usually the wind element is translated into English as motion and sometimes as pressure. To me, I feel that the translation as motion is a bit misleading, because when we think about something that moves.
I think that when we learn to understand reality, we can understand it better than thinking about the word and try to find out the reality of it. For example, at moment of touching balloon, it's different from touching whatever is hot.
Right. Or when our hands are up, it's different when our hands are down.
Because hardness itself cannot move at all. So there are four primary rupas. We use the word for primary rupas, it means that without these four primary rupas, no other kind of that can appear, like color or visible object or sound or smell. all depends on the four primary rupas. Whatever we touch, anything which we take it for flower, it's hard. And without hardness, there cannot be that which can be seen. And sometimes when we touch something which is hot, it's a reality which is there. No one there at all. Can the water be hot? Hot water?
I'm not actually sure how to respond to that.
Hot water is different from cold water. But what is touched is not the water. It's only heat and cold. Different kinds of reality.
At the moment of touching the microphone or touching the arm of the chair, what is experienced? What's touched? What's experienced?
The feeling.
What kind of what you call feel? What is actually touched at that moment? What is experienced? Hot or cold or hard or soft or what is touched?
Yeah, and then it's hard.
Hard, yeah. It's hard and a little bit cool. Yeah. So actually, we usually think that we touch a microphone or touch water in the shower, but actually now what is actually experienced is hardness or coolness, and at the moment of touching water what is experienced is heat or coolness. So what we think we touch or feel is usually just thinking of an idea. What is actually touched at this moment is just hardness, as you say.
We just learn to understand what is there every moment, that's all, that we call life or situation. How many ways or how many doorways to experience or to know what is there? How many doorways? Eyes can see, it cannot think. Ears, can the ear hear? The ear, can it hear?
It's actually a combination of...
No, just the ear. We know that there must be ear. Without ear, there cannot be hearing, right?
Yeah.
But the ear itself, can it experience or can it hear? It's here and now, see? And we talk about realities in order to understand the truth of it as it is. So now we have ears. Can the ear hear?
So far as I understand, the ear is part of human body and it becomes...
If we don't call human, if we don't call body, we just talk about a reality which can condition hearing. Without the ear, there will never be hearing at all. So we talk about one reality at a time in order to have more understanding the truth of it. At moment sound does not appear, it means that there is no hearing, right? Whenever there is hearing, there must be sound appearing. But can the ear hear? We have ears. Can the ear hear? Now there's sound. Sound is not the ear. Can sound hear? Can the sound hear? It's now. The truth of it is there. At moment when sound arises, can it hear? Can it experience anything? Or it's just sound? Sound is just sound. A reality. Do you like sound? Sound of music?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like is not sound. Like is like. Sound is sound. So many different realities are known. And they all are taken for I or something. But actually, they do not belong to anyone at all. Whatever. Hearing does not belong to anyone. It arises to here, only that, no more. Never to arise again. Any moment of life, any moment of reality, arising and falling away in split seconds, no more to arise again. And this is life, from birth to death. And that can be known. Because not knowing all this reality, can we say that there is understanding of life or of the world?
So what we're actually talking about is that there are two different kinds of realities. There are those realities that don't experience anything. So sound arises and it may or may not be heard, but sound never experiences anything. Ear sense, or ear, which we might use conventionally, is another reality which doesn't experience anything. So sound has to contact the ear sense, but the ear sense doesn't hear anything, it doesn't experience anything. And in order for the sound to be heard, there must be hearing, a moment of experiencing the sound. So the moment of experiencing the sound, or hearing, is a kind of reality that experiences an object. At a moment of seeing is another reality which experiences an object, but that which is seen doesn't experience anything at all. That which is seen, that which is visible, impinges or contacts the eye sense, but it's the seeing experience that actually experiences. So actually in life there are two kinds of realities. Those realities which cannot experience anything at all, like sound or ear sense or visible object, and those realities that can experience an object, such as hearing or seeing or thinking, like now. It's quite deep.
Yes, because it must be quite new, because we are used to think of people and chairs and tables and all the things around us. And now we speak about realities one at a time that can be directly experienced. And that is quite different, and it gives us a quite different outlook on life. Because the purpose of it all is to see that there is not a person, not a self, only all those realities which appear one at a time. And it gives us a quite different view of life, you see. Because Vince just asked me, I lost my husband, and he said, is it not a big change to be alone after that? But I learned from Ajahn Sujin that even when my husband was alive, he was not a person, he was not there, only different realities. His name was Lodewijk, so she taught me there is no Lodewijk even when he was alive, and there is no Nina. Nina is my name. And it makes you look at life quite different, see, when you have a loss of something like that. It is really a great help to know this.
Vince, we were talking about learning to live alone, and we could say that at a moment of seeing, understanding, seeing now, that's actually the whole world, just a moment of seeing. And actually the development of understanding is like learning to live alone with seeing, or at a moment of hearing. There's only that world, just the world of sound for that moment. So when there is understanding that it is just sound which is heard at that moment, there is living alone, no matter in Holland or here or with people or not with people, in busy place or quiet place. So the development of understanding of the truth of life is like the development of learning to live alone at any moment. Do you have any comment on Vince? Hi, when we're talking to Rajiv, who says he has a different background, but he's interested to learn more about life and truth. So we don't have to talk about or think about taking refuge in the triple gem or something. We can just consider more about life and realities, no matter our background or no matter our different ideas or philosophy.
Rajesh, I just, you know, hearing about hearing and seeing and, you know, there's nobody that hears, that nobody that sees. These are just realities. The reason we learn about these realities and are interested in learning about the realities is because at the heart of the matter, there is really no one, no self that can control these things. I think we've all experienced situations where we thought we were going to do something, and at the last split second, we do something else. And conventionally, we might say, well, kind of lost control, or I changed my mind. But there's really no I to lose control or change their mind. And without some understanding of the realities at the base, or that prompt and give rise to all of our thinking, it's very difficult to understand no self. I mean, conceptually and intellectually is the way to start, but that's the point of considering things this way. I don't know whether that helps or not. Maybe not.
It is only new subject that we are talking about, like other subjects, just to learn about what appears now at this real moment. That's all. When things one knows, one can talk about it, right? But there should be something to think carefully about what is now. If there is no experiencing the element which can experience anything, there will never be anything at all, right? Thinking about before anything arises, there's no sound, and then there's sound, and where's the sound? Just gone. From nowhere to nowhere. From nothing to something, and then nothing. Is this not this moment? It is every moment, unknown, because no one thinks about it. So we come to understand what is it now. That's all. Talk about anything. Whenever it arises, it's there. But when there's no conditions for its arising, who can condition its arising? No one can at all. So life does not go along as you like it or as you not like it. But it's the way it is.
Nina, on the topic of there never was Ludovic and there isn't Ludovic now, and we were discussing this morning about how the Dharma is the best medicine and how it's not always easy to take the medicine, not always easy to hear, but when one considers further, actually it is what makes life more meaningful, or it is the greatest help. Would you say a little more?
And it's like this. We hear about realities now. That is only a Dhamma and not a self, not a person. But it means we hear it only once and then we consider. And it means that we cannot understand it straight away. We have to hear it for many times and consider it for many times. And then very, very gradually understanding can grow, and that's why it's so very useful that we have together here all those discussions, and that we can remind one another that there are only realities. And it helps a lot too to know better the different qualities of mental qualities which arise. Some are wholesome or good and some are not good, but it is very good to know more precisely those different mental qualities, because usually we read about them and more in general we know them in theory, but when they arise actually we do not know them, and little by little we can understand more those different moments when there are wholesome or good moments, helping one another, being kind, or we have conceit, or we are angry. All those different moments we get to know very slowly, and we remind each other when things happen in our daily life, like the breakfast, some may like it, some may not like it, or the laundry, some are not so very happy and others do not mind. It depends. All those things in daily life, we learn more about it.
Today is tomorrow of yesterday, right? And today will be yesterday of tomorrow, for sure. So where was yesterday? Not at all today. So each moment of today passed very rapidly, unknowingly, until tomorrow there would be no more today. And life is like this. Without understanding, or with understanding of what life is or what the world is.
And usually during the day there are so many things we are so interested in or attached to, and so many things that we're bothered about and concerned about. But by tomorrow, now will be yesterday, and we'll have already forgotten about the tastes we enjoyed so much today, or the things that we were so bothered about, or the problem with the laundry or whatever. So what seems so important now actually will just be forgotten instantly. So whatever arises falls away instantly.
Yes, we are all the time reminded that it's gone immediately. Otherwise we keep on holding on to our thoughts and finding them so important. But now we learn, no, they fall away immediately.
Like this morning, as Nina mentioned, there was a little problem with her bathroom, and we were just talking at breakfast about how it's gone immediately. So it's just moments of thinking and then gone, never to return.
With not understanding of what is what at all.
Even the problem with the computer is just a moment of thinking at this moment.
Or feeling tired or anything, just moments of thinking and then gone instantly and forgotten.
Because we learn that we cling so much to ourselves and our own well-being. That's why we find it so important to be tired and we don't like it, or we have a good sleep and we find that very important. Everything, ourselves, we find so important. And now we learn little by little that it's all gone and only momentary, different moments.
And I think another part of that is that when there's so much clinging to what we consider our problems, it can make us think that life is miserable. And it's that idea of self that clings on to our difficulties that makes life seem miserable. And when there's more understanding that it's really just momentary and it's gone, and understanding that it really arises from realities that arise and fall away and are gone, there can be more detachment from what we see as being our problems.
And when we have problems, we always blame other people and they are the cause of our problems. But now we learn that it's only our own defilements and thoughts and vices that are the real cause of all those problems we have.
I think to me, when we can learn that there's only realities that arise and pass away, and own the idea of me and myself and my family and the world and everything. It's just ideas. Then I can consider more that what is more valuable in this life is the quality of each moment. So it leads me to consider that each moment of wholesomeness is different from moments of unwholesomeness, and that the moment of wholesomeness is much more valuable. And also, when you consider that the moment of wholesomeness, if there is clinging and not understanding, the true nature of it can give rise to future problems and sufferings. So that's how I can see the benefits of developing understanding. Otherwise, we don't see the point of talking about seeing and hearing very common things in our life.
If when we talk with our friends, we may talk about the problems in the world, for example, the politics in Sri Lanka or the difficulties with the electricity or the computers or the journeys or the traffic. So we may think about these as the problems in life. But what we begin to learn or consider is that the real problems are just at the moments of thinking with ignorance, thinking with clinging, thinking with aversion. Because if there's no clinging to things being a certain way, or no anger or aversion when it's not as we'd like, or no ignorance at this moment, we can say, actually, no problem. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, actually, sort of. The recurring problems we find in day-to-day, probably see at your working environment, you're at office. Example, you have a bad relationship with your boss, and then you see the boss every day in the morning, you see. So you try to forget it. Okay, just this 8 hours only I'm going to be stuck with him. But then it keeps on, you see him every day. And then it sort of becomes almost like a personal problem, like a permanent problem, because you see that person daily. So how do you deal with such a situation?
So I think this is a very common situation, and maybe with one's boss or one's family members, and we all have to deal with other people. And as Nina said, usually when we are with other people, we think a lot about ourselves and our own comfort and what we would like. And sometimes we may think about the other person's welfare. So at moments of, for example, thinking about the other person's welfare or what they would like instead of ourselves, at those moments there's no problem at all. The problems are just when we're thinking about ourselves and our own needs, and maybe thinking about what is heard and what is seen with annoyance or not liking what it is. So understanding comes closer to understanding that actually it's not the boss that's a problem, because when with the boss, like now, there are just moments of seeing what is visible, moments of hearing sound, and then thinking. And thinking can be wise thinking or unwise thinking. It can be thinking with annoyance or thinking with kindness or thinking in many different ways. So the real problem always comes back to one's own way of thinking at this moment. But it's natural that many, many moments of clinging to oneself, many moments of annoyance, but it's good to begin to understand what the truth of life is, and gradually there can be more understanding. It doesn't mean there won't be problems at work or difficulties in life, but through understanding we know what the real cause of problems is, and the real cause of problems is not the boss. The real cause of problems is one's own attachment to what is seen and heard and having things one's own way.
So from ignorance, so not knowing about the reality which appears now, so all the problems in one's life is from ignorance and attachment.
Well, of course, there are many kinds of problems with our relationship with other people. The other person may be rude to us, impolite, use harsh speech, make unreasonable demands, that sort of thing. And we will obviously react to that because that is our nature. We have conceit, the way other people treat us. Insofar as that kind of reaction on our part, again, it is because of that accumulated tendency that we have. But also we were talking earlier about how things happen by conditions, and we understand from our own experience that we also can speak harshly to other people or be impolite, and that happens because of what we call just conditions. It is conditioned. We don't want to be that way, but that's how it is. And so we understand that for the other person, if that is happening, then for that person also it is a conditioned behavior because of accumulated tendencies. That person can't act any other way at that moment.
I think that there is the idea that I have problem with the people, but actually, where's the problem? The other people, or where? Or you, or I? Who has problem? Think a lot and find out where is the problem, not the other person. Because they might be kind, they might be bad, they might be whatever, but it doesn't hurt you because it's theirs, right? But when it's your own anger, it doesn't hurt the other at all. It hurts what you take for, I am angry, I dislike this and that. But actually, dislike is a reality. No one likes to have dislike at all. No one doesn't want to have unpleasant feeling, but it's there, uncontrollable by conditions. And if there is not conditions for such and such emotion, feeling, memory or whatever, they cannot arise at all. That's why anyone who doesn't want to feel bad, to have sorrow, that one has to understand how come such and such unpleasant realities. Otherwise, they must always be there. You like something that you would like to have it, to get it very much. You look for it. You search for it. You have it to lose it, for sure. And that is a problem. Because you lose the thing you like, no one can stop you from not having such feeling at all. But if you understand realities as they are, it will condition less and less attachment because you just want to have it, you have it, and then you lose it. So what's the use of just wanting it, look for it, have it, and then lose it? Everything is like that, not under anyone's control at all. Actually, in the absolute truth, nothing belong to anyone because they are absolute realities.
So we say this about losing things, but we can also say when we lose a dear person and then there is mourning and sorrow, but we should realize that it's actually our own clinging which is the cause of sorrow, because we cling to our own pleasant feeling we like to have when we are in the company of a dear person. And so when we lose that person, we are very unhappy. But it is very good to realize what is the real cause of unhappiness. It's by ourselves, our own clinging, clinging to self.
Conceit, one of you mentioned, oh, for example, when the boss may behave in a certain way, or there may be conceit, and this is a topic you like. Would you like to mention a little bit about conceit?
We talk about conceit in general in society, but according to the Buddhist teaching, the meaning is deeper. It is when we find ourselves so important. we may find ourselves better or equal or less than other people and comparing. But even when there is no comparing, we cling to the importance of ourselves. And also that in our relationship with others, this conceit can cause problems because it can condition aversion and unpleasant feeling, not at the same time, because conceit is a kind of clinging, but it conditions that unpleasant feeling afterwards. So it's very useful to understand more about conceit, and also when it is there at the present moment now, or at this moment when it arises, to learn about all those different good and bad qualities.
So, any problems now? Moments of wise reflection or careful considering about truth, no problems in life?
I guess that's a moment almost all the time, like we choose the seat that we feel comfortable, and after maybe a few minutes we feel uncomfortable, and then we have to change the seat, then I think is a problem. And we see that direction, not the other one, because we see that is something that we like. And after a few moments we have to choose another object to see. So it is a problem as well, right?
What do you like?
It's not you really to yeah. It's not easy to know that. For example, I look that way. Okay. There might be something nice, but I'm not sure.
What do you like? Just one, please.
Three?
Three?
Yes.
Really? Is there three? You like what? You like what? You
like I like visible object, nice visible object.
Yes, you cling to that whenever there is seeing. And you like sometimes beautiful sound. You cling to sound, but you take it for something, like the sound of organ, the sound of violin, or the sound of what. But actually, it's just sound. That's why we have to understand the absolute realities, that actually what one takes for something permanent is only a reality that can be experienced to one of the six doorways at moment of seeing. Nothing can appear except that which you take for a tree that you like. But actually, without seeing, can there be a moment of liking what when it's not there?
For sure, no.
Mm-hmm. So there is attachment to that which is seen, and also attachment to the seeing as I. Actually, both are conditioned, arising and falling away. Now, it's not the moment you look at it, not at the moment you like it. It's different moments. Can you stop not liking anything?
No.
Impossible. Only right understanding can see clearly, as it's not permanent at all. You might still think about that tree you like, but actually it's not there. Nothing is there in reality. It's only in memory. Because you look at it, the new seeing, not the same one. Lot of very great ignorance of whatever appears.
When you talk about the problem of moving, so actually it's just moments of attachment is the problem then, right?
Yes.
So just common, but moments of understanding, seeing or attachment, then no problem at all at those moments. And Heng, is there any way to stop clinging except for developing understanding?
What, Emily?
Is there any way to stop clinging other than developing understanding gradually?
No.
Is there clinging right now? To what?
To people, to thing,
to idea.
To idea.
Of people.
Yeah. But nice actually, or not nice, like it or not like it.
and so on.
To idea of myself.
Clinging to whatever is there, even if so very, very short, because of ignorance. But I think that as the truth is the truth, it can be directly experienced. Because just talking about it is not the strong enough understanding to eradicate the idea of no one at all in this room. There are only different absolute realities with the idea of that as something all the time. But since there is not enough understanding of the absolute truth, it's only the words. But that is not enough because the truth is the truth. That's why there was the one who has enlightened the truth of everything. I mean Buddha. And he taught for 45 years for people to understand whatever is there in life at any time.
Hi, are there some other ways you can recommend that might be more helpful to develop understanding rather than just considering and discussing more about the truth now? Because this morning you mentioned that you consider there may be many ways.
But I guess in the other many ways it still goes through thinking, still through considering, right? You still have to have that process. I think in what I meant, it's not about different way of developing understanding of the realities, but in the way that different way of view things, right? Different way of explaining the happiness and the purpose of life and stuff like that, right?
So this morning we were discussing about how we may follow all kinds of happiness, some looking for pleasant feeling or having good job or all kinds of conventional experience, but actually we discussed how really all that is important in life is actually developing understanding at this moment. So can you think of any other goals or approaches that are just as worthwhile?
Well, I guess personally for me, I would think there would be some other thing that I find more important. Changing from time to times, yeah.
Find it important changing from time to time, would you say more?
But you are looking for example, right? Well, I guess sometimes it's like it can be association with family. Sometimes it can be understanding of something like, you know, how things work or how different logic. So sometimes it's just different things.
Well, I think we said this morning, in the course of a day, we often don't think about what is actually the true nature of things and we attach importance to many other things, family, friends, work, conventional aims, etc. But we only do so in a fleeting kind of sense, I think. So things that you're interested to know how they work, if someone then said to you, well, is this more important than family, for example, although it might be at that moment, you wouldn't think it of importance in any significant sense, right, how something works. Even if it's the human body, but it's still just mechanics, right? So although we do find other things important from time to time, that is just our interest, a curiosity, or we have certain values that we hold to, some good, probably some not so good, but these sorts of things don't bring any lasting outcome, do they?
Any contradiction, Hai? For example, when we talk about understanding more about dharmas in life, no matter when or where or how, does that mean that one cannot give a lot of priority to helping family members or one cannot follow one's career or work hard? Do you see any contradiction?
Well,
Because these are just different examples of daily life.
I guess it's not a matter of conflicting between different things, like understanding reality or the different conventional goals in life. But I think the point, like to me, for example, is not, I don't see that in conflicting, but whether saying that or acknowledging that understanding or having understanding as my purpose in life, for example, perhaps I'm not ready to take it.
So say that when there is more understanding, that actually it conditions more kindness and help, for example, with family or work colleagues, or one has no conflict because one knows that there are just these different realities no matter how life goes, so one doesn't have any idea that one shouldn't be following one's work goal or something like that. So actually the understanding should make life easier. There should be more living as at ease, as we discussed this morning, no matter what one's conventional goals or family relationships might be.
I think truly, in some sense, it's a little bit relieving, you know, like to find that, you know, there's no one there to control and there would be no problem. But on the other hand, right, I would also hear me thinking, oh, well, it would be take a long time until I get that level of understanding so that the problem will be no problem anymore. So I guess it's that.
Comes back to now. So now, is there any control about what will be seen right now or what is heard now?
Theoretically, perhaps.
Or what is thought about now?
No control.
Yeah.
But really, like, how long that understanding lasts? I don't know.
Actually, it only lasts a moment, but actually, when there's a little understanding, how there are just these different realities rising and falling away by conditions, it becomes more apparent that no one can make it happen. Like at the moment of tasting what we call the poppadom, no one chose what taste to experience. The tasting is conditioned at that moment. The thinking about it is conditioned. And it's like that at each moment. So that's why the understanding always has to be now. And then so much ignorance or not understanding, but that's just by conditions as well.
So do you think that the understanding of the realities has value only when it's in a more advanced stage, or it has a big value at any level, even at the level of theoretical understanding? I'm not sure. I haven't actually thought about answering that question before. No. I asked that because you said that because you see that it's very far, you're still very far from getting to that level. So that's why I wonder. So maybe you can tell us more about what you mean when you say that you feel that you're still more very far away from that level, and what does it affect the way you think that the development of understanding is really, really important or not really that important? Long story. That will be a long story. Yeah.
Can anyone not have problem at all?
I don't see that. I haven't seen that.
Can anyone not have problem at all?
No.
So forget about not having problem. So I think that we would like to understand the truth of life, the truth of this moment, rather than trying to solve the problem. Because problem cannot be solved at all as long as there are conditions for problem to arise. It arises for sure. That's why I think that we come here to listen, to talk, to think about whatever is the absolute reality right now, instead of thinking of people and things as usual. One, I use this word because it's common, is born alone, die alone, right? See alone, think alone, live alone. Any moment, at moment of thinking of many things, without such thinking, there will never be anything at all. That is the object of thinking. So at any moment of thinking, it's because one has seen, has heard about what one thinks about. Memory is there. Conditioned thinking. Could you select the moment to think about? The story or the object that you'd like to think about? Never. No one can do anything because the absolute realities must always be absolute realities. No one at all. If one cannot understand this in this life, and life keeps going on, because one thinks of life as I was born and I die, but actually the absolute realities arise by conditions. No one there. And as soon as it has arisen, that element which can experience whenever it arises, it is experience. Otherwise, there will never be any being at all, no matter in what world. What we take for people, no matter this world or animal world, there must be the reality which can experience an element which is there. No one can stop its arising because there are conditions for its arising. It will not arise only when there's no conditions for its arising at all. But it arises by conditions, not understanding the condition for its arising. So it keeps on the conditioned reality arising and falling away, even right now. So I think that the truth is the truth, and no one can understand that. Only the person who had enlightened the truth and taught about the truth for 45 years, because it's not easy to understand the true nature of whatever appears now. But from hearing little by little, it brings about the understanding of what one hasn't heard about before. For example, the element which experiences is a reality. It means that it's not anyone at all. It's only a reality which arises to experience and then falls away. Hearing is the reality which arises just to hear. It cannot see, and it's not moment of seeing or thinking. So the world is conditioned. So there are many things appear as what we take for things and people. That's why if we understand the absolute truth, there will be less attached with ignorance of that which appears. For example, attachment is so great. Who knows that now at the moment of seeing right now, there is attachment to seeing for sure. What about if there is no seeing anymore? There is clinging to seeing. It just arises, it sees, and it falls away. But not understanding it as a reality, not I, not anyone at all, only the reality which arises to see, that is clinging to seeing, to see again and again and again, and take seeing for I see all the time. Whereas there's no I, there are only seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking the whole life. And how can there be such understanding of each reality right now without hearing, considering at all? It will never arise. The understanding of whatever appears now is conditioned from hearing the words of truth. No other way. Could there be more understanding? Not only this. This is the very beginning.
Hearing and then considering, it means reflecting on it later on, perhaps, or reflecting on it at that moment. But it is different from understanding just now. It's not the same.
We are talking about understanding the absolute truth of reality right now. That without hearing the words of truth of it, there will never be the understanding of it at all, right? So it needs hearing the right words for anyone to reflect on it, whether it's right, whether it's true or not. That's only the point. If it's true, it can be directly experienced as not self, as a moment of seeing, arising and falling away of that which is seen, as that is a reality that can be seen only. Arising, if it does not arise, it cannot appear. It cannot impinge on the eye base. There are no conditions for seeing to arise. Each moment is conditioned.
When you hear each moment is conditioned, does it make any sense to you?
Yeah, actually, I was wondering, could the conditions be controlled by anyone, or is it? It just happens. It's in the universe, if I may use that word.
Saying, for example, is a moment of seeing now, which sees, as we've discussed, that which is visible. And usually we go through life thinking, I can control. But this moment of seeing now, can you or anyone control it or make it arise now?
No, not. Say, example, if that tree, I look at that tree, it's there. So at that particular moment, it has happened.
Right, yeah. You didn't decide, okay, I'm going to see that object. There was a moment of seeing, and that which was visible was seen immediately. Next moment, hearing of sound or thinking about what was seen, but you didn't say to yourself, okay, I'm going to think about tree now. Just by certain conditions, there was thinking in that way. So what we learn is that each reality in life, no matter it's seeing or hearing or thinking or what is seen, what is heard, each reality arises because of particular conditions. And we can discuss more in detail about conditions, which are very intricate. But the point at this moment is just to show that actually it's not I who see or I who hear or I who can do anything, because I is just a figment of the imagination. Actually, just a moment of seeing which sees, which arises by its conditions, experiences what is seen, falls away. At a moment of thinking, thinking arises, thinking thinks about some idea, falls away. So where is this I who can control or do anything?
We all have a strongly ingrained idea that these conditions can be controlled. And at different levels in our life, that seems to be the case. We can plan the day, we can intend to do something, and we do it. But our general experience, if we think about it, shows us that as often as not, things don't work exactly as planned anyway. But here we are considering just the present moment. There's no reason why we shouldn't consider on a broader scale, but if we think about it, and Ajahn gave the example of the present moment of seeing, we can see that on that level, at that point, it's happened before there can be any control about it. Likewise, the way we react to things, it happens instantly without any doing on our part, like and dislike or getting angry or finding pleasure in something. And then, of course, the idea can arise, well, I would rather my reaction was different, and it can seem to be controlled in that sense. But in the most significant way, the present moment happens so quickly that it cannot be controlled. And the present moment is always all there ever is.
Is there Rajiv?
Is there Rajiv? in a moment of reality, I am there for someone. See, for you, for your eye, moment of reality, I'm there. But then I'm gone. And my next second, your view of me is it's a different one.
While you are sleeping, is there a jeep?
On whose perspective are
you? At the moment of sleeping, while one is sleeping, fast asleep, is there Rajiv? Is there world? Is there anyone? Is there any idea where am I? How many friends I have?
To myself, is it?
While at the moment of being fast asleep.
Yeah, you're asking my view whether... When I'm sleeping, when I'm existing, is that what I'm what you're asking?
Nothing appear. No Rajiv, no world, no friend. Why it's like that? If there's no seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, but there's still life, realities, it's not death yet. So what is there? Absolute reality, the reality which experiences still arise, otherwise that will not be any being at all. We take people as long as there is the reality which can experience an object. But at the moment of being fast asleep, it's not death. There must still be that reality which can experience. But it does not arise to see. It does not arise to hear. It does not arise to think. How can there be the idea of anything like world or I or my friend or my name or my house? Nothing at all. Uncontrollable. It has to be like this. So life and what you take for people and thing and world, at moment of seeing, after seeing, memory of that which is seen, take it for something all the time. People or things. At moment of hearing, after hearing, memory takes the sound, make known as someone or something, situation all the time. But all are not permanent. Each moment is conditioned. And it has to go on like this, not only this life, after this life. Because the succession of the arising and falling away of the absolute realities, no one can stop. As long as there are conditions for the arising of the reality, it has to arise. When there are conditions for seeing, hearing cannot arise.
Condition.
Uncontrollable.
Every moment can be understood as uncontrollable, no self, no one there. Does a cat see? A cat. Does it see? A cat?
Yeah.
Does a bird see? A bird. A fish?
Yeah.
A snake? Seeing is seeing. Without shape and form, can you tell whether it's cat or dog or snake sees? So seeing is always seeing. Seeing cannot be anything else at all. So seeing cannot be I or mine or dog or cat. After seeing has fallen away, the conditions for next moment succeeds the seeing immediately. That's why the reality which arises to experience is non-stop. The trouble comes from ignorance, not understanding that actually there's nothing permanent at all. Would you like to solve problem?
Yes.
But
so there is still you, so there must be problem. It can be solved only when there is more and more understanding. Can ignorance understand ignorance? Can attachment understand attachment as attachment? No. Only right understanding can develop until it can eradicate the idea of I or self from the absolute realities.
I'm sorry, I did a little of the classic mind wandering. I didn't hear what you just said.
Uncontrollable.
Yes, uncontrollable. But it's that's one of the things that that's why we have to understand realities, have some direct understanding of realities, because while we still do not fully understand through direct understanding, the idea of self remains, and it's very difficult. It's very difficult conceptually. No self. Although the more understanding grows, the more understanding there is of no self, the anattaness of everything. I think it becomes clearer with, it definitely becomes clearer with more understanding, and what needs to be done to understand fully becomes more clear as well, although there is nothing we can conventionally do, just hearing the Dhamma and considering, and slowly the understanding will grow. We can't force it. We can't shortcut to it.
I find it helpful to think in terms just of understanding Dhammas rather than trying to have an understanding of no self, because then it's not trying to see something a certain way.
I think you've just said a whole lot better what was maybe behind what I was saying, that you can't think your way through it conceptually. It comes through the understanding of Dhammas.
So I find it helpful just to think in terms of understanding what is real at the present moment. And it's up to conditions to what extent the idea of no self is or is not. I think to say one is trying to understand no self sounds a little weird.
Well, it is weird because you can't think your way through it. I guess I'm coming at it. I agree with everything you're saying completely, that it's through the understanding of realities that the understanding of no self, the understanding of realities will lead to an understanding that there is no one who controls, no one who can do anything.
On the subject of control, if there is understanding that the present moment can't be controlled, then there's no way the future can be controlled. In a general sense, we want to control the future rather than the present moment, and we're always planning to do that. But we're coming back to the most fundamental of times, which is the present moment, an understanding of how that happens so spontaneously and without any expectation helps us to have a more realistic attitude to the notion of control of our life.
Vince, I think you have a lot of experience in explaining about Buddhism in very simple language to beginners or people from other traditions. How would you explain in relatively simple language to Rajiv about why you are interested in the Buddha's teachings?
I think if I was talking to Rajiv, I'd probably start surprisingly from the understanding of Catholicism, because I would start from his basis first and then from there move on from there, and that way Rajiv would have something definitely very solid to work with, because it can be rather daunting, I think, just because I'm Italian background, so Roman Catholic also. So I think if I was going just from a Catholic background to hearing this, it's interesting, but I don't know if it would really make that solid difference in one's life without some shift there.
First question to him be?
I would be a long conversation. It would be a long conversation, and it would start from, I guess I would start just from the first of all, the morality within Catholicism, within Christianity, and the morality within Buddhism, and simple little things like that, and then move on to, I would definitely then want to move on pretty quickly onto a very fundamental issue of Catholicism, which is God. And what God means, and what God means in Buddhism, and I would move in those directions there. But I would want to move in an area that he's familiar with, because otherwise it can be rather. You understand what I'm saying, John Suchin?
But if you don't understand what morality is, it's not the beginning, because there is still the idea that I have morality and so on. But actually, the teachings of the Buddha boil down to this moment, no one, no self, only absolute reality. So no matter what we are talking about, for example, morality, it should be beginning with what is it? Because each word of the Buddha brings about understanding whatever appears now. So if there is no understanding of what is it now, so we just think about morality and other things as I, but Buddha taught us about the truth of whatever is now, and each word should be studied as what is it from the very beginning in order to have more and more understanding of it. In Tipitaka, the words of the Buddha, if there is no reality which can experience, can there be morality?
You said that there's no...
If there's no reality which can experience that we call citta,
yes.
Can there be any morality?
No, there has to be the experience. Has to be
that's why we have to understand what we take for morality. It's only the reality, the citta and jetasikas. Because citta is that which can experience. It cannot remember, it cannot feel, it cannot like, it cannot dislike, it cannot behave morally or immoral at all. So we have to understand the reality, which are so many, many, like some are wholesome and some are unwholesome, but they are all non-self, not me. They are different realities.
But Sarah's, I understand and I agree, Achan, but Sarah's point was, how would I begin? And I would begin with a general conversation in terms of what is your understanding of morality and what is my understanding, and then proceed. Probably I wouldn't be as ambitious as yourself in terms of in the non-self part of it too quickly, but I would start from the beginning. That way it'd be an inclusive conversation. I would feel it'd be inclusive.
What is this moment? Because it passed from time to time without understanding. So understanding begins at this very moment, of this moment.
But an understanding of, like in Yamguttara Nikaya, the Buddha is very, he speaks very simply in many ways. For example, if not killing is not killing, alopa is alopa, as against lopa, very simple terms. Not killing is better than killing. It has advantages to killing. So even though there's no discussion there about self or not self, there's a discussion there about the importance of simple little things like that, or not drinking alcohol, for example, which is a part of other cultures, other cultures, shall we say. It is not part of Buddhism. And why is it not part of Buddhism?
Not killing is not only the word of Buddha. It's the word of anyone who would say not killing. But Buddha didn't say not killing.
Actually, that's not true, because I'm sorry to say that, but because some groups do encourage killing. Even this concept of not killing any living being is pretty unique in Buddhism.
Yes, but actually what kills?
That's the next step. That's another step.
I think that it's the first step, because he's the Buddha who enlightened the truth of any moment. So it has to be very precise. What does not kill? Virati cetasikas.
But when the Buddha was teaching sila to householders, he didn't start, in the suttas, he never starts with the concept who is killing and who is not. He would start with the premise of, is this right or is this not right? Is this wholesome or is this not wholesome? Is this beneficial? Is it not beneficial to yourself and to others? That's the premise he would start from, rather than from, is this self or not self? Is this I or not I? He started from a very simple basis.
No one, no self, anatta. All dhammas are anatta. That's the teachings, the words of the Buddha. All, any moment, whatever. So each word brings about understanding of the truth of every moment. At moment of not killing, it's not I at all. Only the wholesome mental factor, the three virtue cetasikas, arising just one at a time, not all three together. No one. Otherwise, there must be always the idea, the wrong understanding of taking reality for self from life to life. Even at moment of birth, no name yet, no Vince, no Sarah. It's only the moment of experiencing an object, succeeded moment of death, of last life. No one can control. That is the way it is. The way reality arises and falls away continuously, succeedingly by conditions. Everyone understands that life is not permanent. One has to die. Everyone who was born must die. But as someone all the time, not understanding the truth of whatever is there as the absolute reality. That's why all the teachings are about understanding realities as not self.
But the teachings are in levels. They're not always the same level to everybody.
Right understanding from the very beginning. Anatta is the teaching.
But even the concept, even the understanding, it's not a concept, but even the understanding that not killing a living being is not killing that living being because it is a living being, is a level of right
before
understanding.
For the teachings of the Buddha, people do not kill. It doesn't mean that they kill and then Buddha said, not kill. It is not like that.
You mean in India they didn't kill at that time?
Everywhere there is killing and not killing.
Yes.
But they do not understand what kills and what does not kill. That's why the teachings of Buddha is all about understanding reality as it is. Otherwise, he wouldn't be the enlightened one. So, what is sila? What kills? Kills what? There is answer. What kills?
Well, it's the mental states, isn't it? It's maybe lopa or it's dosa.
Dosa.
And certainly moha.
Moha and dosa kills. No one there. If dosa does not arise so strong to kill, there is no killing. And dosa is anger, if one is not used to the Pali term dosa. Only when it's so strong to the degree that it will kill, so then there is killing. Right understanding does not kill. When there is right understanding that seeing sees, no intention to kill that which is seen.
I think part of the point, Rajiv, to bring you back into it is, so there was a discussion about how Vince was saying that he might talk about morality in your religion or morality in Buddhism. And we may think of morality in terms of a certain action, like morality in terms of avoiding killing or not lying or leading a good lifestyle. But when we're talking about morality from a Buddhist understanding, it's actually referring to the behavior of moments of consciousness and mental states, which change all the time. So it may seem like a good act of morality, but actually at a moment of not killing, it's just a moment of abstaining from harming for a moment, and next moment another kind of moment. So actually in this sense, morality, or we have a word, sila, can be good or bad, and it changes at each moment. So it actually refers to the kind of thinking and the mental states which condition certain deeds or speech. So it all comes back not to what we consider as an act as such, but to the way of thinking from moment to moment in a wholesome way or an unwholesome way, leading to certain kinds of good deeds or bad deeds. So it's actually quite deep and subtle. And the distinction, or the reason we talk about it, is because we're used to, no matter what our background or religion, we're used to thinking in terms of I'm avoiding killing, or I'm leading this kind of good lifestyle. But by understanding the nature of the different kinds of consciousness and the different mental states, we learn that actually, again, it's not I that do or don't do anything. They're just different moments of consciousness that behave in a particular way. So it's quite deep and quite subtle.
Morality starts before the time of Buddha, right? Even today, everyone understands what morality is. But the morality of the Buddhist teachings is different from other morality, because it is with right understanding which will lead to the eradication of ignorance and all unwholesome reality. That's why the teachings of the Buddha, the word is different from the other, like anatta. This is the word. No one says it before, because I and he or she of things are understood all the time. But the teachings of the Buddha, from his enlightenment, there is not anything permanent, and each is conditioned to be such element. It cannot be changed. Heat is heat, hardness is hardness, visible object is visible object. And this is the teachings of the enlightenment, different from others, even what you call morality. Morality without understanding is not the teaching of the Buddha, but morality with understanding, which will lead to more and more wholesomeness and less ignorance, will lead to enlighten the truth of what we are talking about right now.
Three very central aspects of the Buddha's teachings are that, as we've discussed, there are these different realities which are conditioned, and because they're conditioned, they're not controllable by any self. So this is the word anatta that Ajahn just mentioned. So it means these dhammas are not in anyone's control, and these dhammas, all these realities, all arise and fall away. They're impermanent, and because they're impermanent, they're not satisfactory, they're not worth clinging, because they fall away instantly.
That's why from the very beginning it has to be one's own understanding. It doesn't mean that one will follow the words of such person like Buddha. He taught us to have our own understanding. Anyone who hear his word, listen to his word, consider it, reflect on it, until it's one's own understanding. Like, is anything permanent? It's not just follow his word, but is seeing last the whole day? No, At moment of hearing, there's no seeing. At moment of thinking, there's no seeing, no hearing. So we can see that it's not just belief, but it's from hearing and understanding what is the truth and what is not the truth. That's all. Because I think that everyone appreciates the truth, not the false at all.
Is true, not what is false, not true.
If I would say everything lasts, do you believe?
Sorry. What you said was everything lasts, but I believe it.
If she said everything, yeah. If she told you everything lasts forever.
Does everything have end?
I think we've been talking about the fact that the truths have to be experienced for oneself. We cannot be told what is the truth. And by truth we mean the way things are, really. We can't be told it. It has to be directly experienced by each person for themselves. And direct experience refers to the present moment. So it's the way things are at the present moment that can be directly experienced by each person for themselves. The question was, if someone tells you everything lasts, would you just accept it? Or would you want to test it against your own experience?
I don't know, after this conversation, it appears everything lasts for a moment.
Everything lasts for a moment. Well, a moment is not forever, though, is it? So everything lasts for only a moment, so therefore it doesn't last forever. So that's a very good answer. His answer is no, only for a moment.
But Jonathan, what's interesting, what Roger just said, was following these conversations, he's not saying that from his own experience in life he can see things that, so it's useless.
Right.
So we can talk about it forever, but at the end of the day, it's not his experience.
Well, we could ask Rajiv, but I think he's giving an answer in the light of what's been discussed today. He's not just saying, well, you people say everything lasts for a moment, so therefore that's the answer I'll give. I think he's saying, well, following the conversation, I can see that, in a sense, things are momentary.
It's his own understanding. Will it be changed?
I mean, firstly, this is a more or less new language for me. So if this understanding leaves a permanent mark in my mind, the way I look at things, then it might not change. It will not change, actually.
You won't change idea from everything does not last at all?
In the sense we are following from the conversation.
I think the bottom line is that it's not starting from brass tacks. It's not starting from the very beginning. It's not starting from the very beginning because Rajiv is still not even convinced that everything is actually anicca, impermanent. Even though it wasn't very long ago that Rajiv was a little baby, and now look at him now, he's still not convinced that everything is anicca. And within a few years, he could look like me and you.
Actually, all are absolute reality.
Yes.
Otherwise, there is the idea that I, Rajiv, from baby, each day up to now, baby anymore.
But it's a pretty good indication that things don't last.
Say it again, please.
It's a very good... the human body, the aging of the human body is a very good indication of the point you were making. Does anything last? Because the human body does not last.
Yeah, and what about the tree?
It also changes and doesn't last also.
What about this?
Same, same. Mm-hmm. Same, same.
Means
dukkha.
Anicca?
Anicca means dukkha, which means impermanence, means unsatisfactoriness. It's unsatisfactory. It's sometimes translated as suffering, but really more unsatisfactory because change is always... The nature of change cannot make satisfaction.
Even the sun, the moon, the stars...
But you see, this is not philosophy, you know. when my mother died, it was very, very unsatisfactory. It's not philosophy. It's a fact, you know. So this is not, you know, thinking. It's just fact. Things change. It causes suffering. It causes pain, you know.
Things can change for the better.
Well, it depends on how you look at it. Depends how, if you look at it as better, but it depends how you look at it. You know?
And just because of that.
But the very nature, see, the very nature of change, though. See, for example, we may get lousy food today. Tomorrow we may get really good food. And we say, I'm glad everything's a Nietzsche because today I got good food. But the very nature of that change will, in the end, you'll lose out. There's suffering in that very nature, in that very aspect of change. Is that how you would describe the inadequacy of a Nietzsche? Because Rajiv is asking, he's saying, well, today it can be bad, tomorrow it can be good, so Nietzsche could be very good.
But what is today? You would say it lasts or not last. What is it? The first question, in order to go on talking about it, we have to understand what is it? From the very beginning. Otherwise, we just talk about that which is not clear. What is today? And what is tomorrow? If there is no reality arising and falling at all, can there be today and tomorrow? Or yesterday?
But it's interesting, those realities arise in the past, in a way, in the most obvious and the most painful way, which is what the Buddha often talked about, with birth, old age, sickness.
That is not the absolute suffering or unsatisfactoriness at all. The anicca, Pali word, is the impermanence. And anatta is non-self. Whatever arises falls away for good. Whatever arises, it arises and falls away. Never arise again. You cannot find it anywhere in this world or anywhere or anywhere at all. It's completely gone, even right now. And that is unseen, unknown, until the words of the truth from the enlightened one. If one heard about it, it can be conditioned for thinking, considering whether it's right or not, it's true or not, and begin to see that it's not be directly experienced at once. It takes time. Right understanding takes time to see. It's not I who sees. It's only a moment of seeing. See? So what is today? Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking. And then tomorrow, the same. Seeing, hearing, smelling, and our other reality like or dislike. Pleasant or unpleasant, uncontrollable.
But the point was, why is this dukkha? Why is this unsatisfactory? Why?
Dukkha in what sense?
In the sense of unsatisfactory.
Because that which arises and falls, what's the use? For example, no sound, and then sound, and then no sound. But there's attachment to sound, so it just arises. To be attached, is that good? And then it's completely gone.
So that the utility you derive from the sound, example music, has a value for me. I will hear music today. That song is only, I have heard it today. Tomorrow I still value it because it's in my memory, I'm humming it. I feel good about it. How do you explain that?
Is that memory of everything? Do you remember everything? Tomorrow you will forget.
Yeah, okay. Does it
matter? So what's the use of that which appears and then it's object of attachment and then forget about it?
In simple terms, I feel good about it. Tomorrow I hear a sound today, which is supposed to be, let's say, a song.
Are you sure for tomorrow?
In 24 hours' time, in reality.
Are you sure what would arise tomorrow?
No, I'm like, this is like...
You did. That'll certainly change things.
Alicia going to...
Just asked me to say something. So when we talk about what is impermanent, before the Buddha's time, people knew that trees changed and fell down and didn't last, and that people would grow old and would die. But when we're talking about the impermanence of realities, we're talking about how today means different realities. So this moment of seeing, it arises, it falls away, this clinging to seeing, but it doesn't last for an instant. That's why it's unsatisfactory. It just arises and is gone. So there's clinging countless times, even now while we talk, to that which has fallen away immediately. So there's always clinging to that which doesn't last. And because of the clinging to that which doesn't last, it brings unhappiness. So at moments of clinging to pleasant sound, at the moment of clinging, so pleasant, but afterwards what has been clung to has gone already, and the pleasant feeling doesn't last. There's not just pleasant feeling in a day, there's unpleasant feeling, and usually we're looking for pleasant feeling all the time. That's why we're looking for pleasant sounds, looking for pleasant sights or tastes or odors or tangible objects. But what is clung to has fallen away instantly, and that's why it's unsatisfactory. We can talk generally and we can say, oh, this table doesn't last and it's going to change and the house will need repairs because it's old and it's changing. But actually we're talking about how at each moment every reality in life doesn't last for an instant, and because it doesn't last, it's quite useless really. So all day we're clinging to that which is quite useless. And so the Buddha taught about the development of understanding what is real as being impermanent and unsatisfactory. And this is the way that more detachment rather than attachment is developed. So it doesn't mean our lifestyle changes. It doesn't mean we don't listen to music or have fun as usual. But gradually, through understanding more about different realities and understanding how unsatisfactory and impermanent they are, there are conditions for a little more detachment in life. Like at this moment, if there's just a little bit of wise considering that what is seen is just that which is visible, not some pretty flowers or our dear friends, but just that which is visible, and this is the world at this moment, that is a condition for a little bit of detachment for a moment, a little bit of calm at that moment, not clinging for an instant. And then life carries on as usual, but understanding can condition more detachment, less clinging as usual at those moments of wise considering.
And I also think that when we still have the idea of I, like it is me and it is the music, something there, it's very difficult to understand the unsatisfactoriness. But when you consider that it's just seeing one moment and then gone, now me at that moment, and hearing one moment and gone, not me at that moment, and own day, own year, own this life, it's just that. Just one moment of seeing gone, one moment of hearing gone, and thinking whatever gone. Then you can better understand. And even, you know, like when you think that the music is so good, you cannot listen to the same music forever. Right? You have to change it again. So in one sense, you can see that it doesn't really bring real satisfaction. If it does bring satisfaction, then you can just listen for it forever or look at the same thing forever. But is it not true? So I think there are certain things that you can consider.
I think that we just learn to understand the truth little by little. That is it true that whatever arises is conditioned? uncontrollable, not at will. No one can make it arise. This is the way reality is. And reality is reality, no one there at all. Seeing sees, not I see. Hearing arises, it hears, not I hear. Whatever is there has its own characteristic. And they are all impermanent.
So brief, if you had to reflect on one aspect from today, it is that the goal is the understanding, no one there at all. Just realities, no one there. You've been sitting with a microphone on your knee for quite a long time. Would you like to say something?
What I'm going to say may not be satisfactory because time is up.
I thought he was going to say we need to meditate. I was getting worried. Definitely no dinner.
Before he would, he should. What is meditation?
I think you've just opened a can of worms.
Being in the present moment.
There at this moment.
Being in the present moment. Did you ask me what was meditation?
Yes, because I have no idea what meditation is. If you would like someone to meditate, you have to explain.
I know what meditation is.
So, please, what meditation is?
To be in the present moment, moment to moment.
To be?
Right understanding, that's right, right understanding.
Of what?
Of the realities.
What reality?
As you taught me.
No.
Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching,
so, at this
thinking.
Moment, can there be the understanding of seeing as the self?
It can be, of course.
How?
Through with right understanding, with
from.
From? Well, you have to hear. You have to hear, you have to consider.
Uh-huh. And consider by yourself.
Oh, definitely by yourself.
Because
that's why I live in a kuti.
Yeah. Because you see that because of ignorance, there is the wrong understanding, taking it for I, even it's not permanent. How can there be I? Because it's conditioned. It arises and it falls away. And since at moment of not understanding, there is the idea of I, and then the attachment to I, so the only way is in order not to be attached to the idea that it's I, or attached to the idea that seeing is I who sees, there must be understanding. More and more. Intellectual understanding, which is so firm, that is the Satyayana.
I think the issue has always been how to remember to understand.
Who can?
No one can.
That's why. Understanding the anattaness can be firmer and firmer. And it's not just saying the seeing sees, that's not enough. Because what is seeing again? There must be question to be thought about until right understanding is there. Seeing sees, right? Seeing cannot hear. Seeing arises. If it does not arise, there is no seeing. And seeing falls away instantly, never to arise again. That is the meaning of unsatisfactoriness. That which is not permanent shouldn't be object of satisfactory. But ignorance doesn't see it, so it attached, it doesn't mind. Now seeing arises and falls away, all right, it's the way it is. But it has to be like this, non-stop, on and on and on, from the past up to present and on to the future. Would you like to be like this, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching from time to time, from life to life, non-stop? And it's not you or anyone. They are only different realities.
I think seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting is one thing, but there's an awful lot of associated suffering that goes along with that as well.
What do you mean by suffering?
Well, suffering, pain.
What kind of pain?
Unpleasant.
What kind of pain? bodily,
mentally,
both. Uncontrollable.
Uncontrollable, definitely.
It's gone. Arising and falling away. It has to be like this.
It's interesting though, the Buddha, whenever he talked about avinicca though, he always spoke about avinicca as birth, old age, sickness and death. As an example. He did.
But it's I. Or someone all the time.
No, not as I. Obviously that was understood. That was understood.
It's only thinking. Mm. It's not the direct experience. So it cannot eradicate the idea of self if it's not that stage of understanding, which is vipassana, from hearing, considering, which is the intellectual understanding, no expectation, because it's anatta. Now, citta and citta-sika arising, falling away all the time, no one knows. What appears is object of attention as somebody, something, but without the reality which thinks there is nothing, because seeing sees and falls away, hearing hears and falls away. But at this moment, who can understand that reality which arises to experience? Not I at all, but that can be directly experienced only by panya, the highly developed panya, not by ignorance.
Anyway, I think this gentleman was saying it was time for dinner.